Check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the NastyCast, we welcome Howard Bender from Fantasy Alarm. We discuss a slew of baseball promotions and big-time trades, hear from Harvey Dinkelman talk about Hernan Perez, and in the second half of the show, we change gears and talk fantasy football. What is this, a fantasy baseball podcast?
Yes!
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things. Yeah. Jesse, go toss a potato.
Here lies Joe. He died wearing braces.
Be interesting when she has her heavy flow at times.
It's not Nick Nolte.
That damn dirty ape.
You're going to blow Arkansas?
The Hindenburger cheese.
We follow the golden rule.
I'm in a league with the Pope.
Could have been an accountant.
Replace the baseballs with hand grenades.
Thor, he's like Jesus, but for people from Norway.
Eating ain't cheating. Hello and welcome to episode 89 of the NastyCast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by thefantasyamateurs.com. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. And I am joined today, first of all, by intrepid producer Jesse Jordan. Aloha, Jesse.
Hey, I'm not used to being introduced this fast, so you almost caught me off guard there. I was waiting for you to at least, you know, make some type of comment.
Were you blown by surprise?
I was blown by surprise. So maybe we should reciprocate the favor here, and you can continue on to introduce our guest.
No, don't worry about me. If you guys are getting blown and you're married, you guys are psyched, because I haven't sniffed that one since my birthday 16 years ago.
Living the dream. And that is the voice of Joe's fill-in for this week. Fantastic guest who graced us earlier this season from Fantasy Alarm, Mr. Howard Bender. Welcome back to the NastyCast.
What's going on, guys? Always a pleasure talking with you guys.
Likewise. And it's nice that you get to meet Mr. Jesse Jordan over here, which, by the way, is his Twitter handle for the Bucketeers out there, because he was not around for the first time that you graced us way back in the preseason, where we had nothing but tender hopes and dreams, which have all but been dashed ever since. But it's good to have you aboard once again. The people can find you on Twitter at RotoBuzzGuy, I do believe.
Correct.
Right on. Okay, so you've been seeing the world recently, have you, Howard? You had a couple weeks of vacation there, toured the countryside.
Whew, I've been seeing something. Yeah, I decided once the Fantasy Alarm draft guide was published, was you know, up and ready to go, then I took off on a 5 shows in 6 nights fish run. Up in the gorge in George Washington, and those fish shows were just insane. And then I came back home to San Francisco for the old staycation. I did 3 shows in 3 nights at Bill Graham Civic Auditorium, and those boys can play.
Yeah,
they certainly can. I don't know if you guys are into the jam band scene or whatnot, but oh my lord, that was musically, it was insane. They were easily the 5 best shows of the tour. And I actually got to interview Fish's lighting designer Chris Carota up at the Gorge for Sirius XM Jam On and for the Fantasy Sports Station as well. So Chris and I actually play in a fantasy football league together where the two stations combined. So we've got a bunch of jam band guides that are sports fans and a bunch of sports guys that are jam band fans, and we all kind of came together in harmony.
Very nice. So explain to me what a fish show is like. I mean, is this – you said they're a jam band, so are we talking like 3-hour shows here, that kind of thing?
It's a 3-hour show. They'll play probably like a – well, no. I mean, it's not like a full 3 hours because there's like a 35 to 45-minute set break in between. So it's about an hour and 20 minutes for each of the two sets, and then they'll come out and they'll do an encore. And I mean, if you've never been, I mean, it's an experience like you'll never have, because if you can really get into the music and understand that it's not always about being technical, and it's not always about sounding like you do on your studio album, and really just kind of exploring certain aspects of the four of you standing on stage together that you've been together for, you know, 30 years, that, you know, I mean, you just kind of feel each other out and see where everything goes. And it's just musically, it's a phenomenal experience. And then the lights are just unbelievable. So Chris Kuroda has been their lighting guy for 28 years. He started off like helping carry their shit to the van at gigs in college. That's nice. How they all kind of met. And in that, since then, he does the lights for Justin Bieber. He does the lights for Ariana Grande. He did the lights for the Dallas Mavericks for a little while. He's currently been doing the Knicks and the Rangers, and now Madison Square Garden has actually contracted him to revamp their entire lighting system in Madison Square Garden for all events and concerts. I mean, he's
so he knows
that
what he's doing.
Good. Yeah, you know, I mean, hit my Twitter page. Go to my Twitter feed and just see what I tweeted out. Go to my Facebook page, and I posted a bunch of pictures of, you know, the kind of work that Kuroda does. And, you know, listen, I've seen shows sober, and they've been phenomenal. I like to smoke weed. I never hide that fact. So, you know, that kind of enhances the experience.
Adds to it, yeah.
Maybe or maybe not. I can neither confirm nor deny that I've hung out with my friend Molly at a show.
We're not one to judge here on the Nasty Cast.
And so, you know, I mean, listen, this is how I relax. This is my happy place. This is my little moment of zen. I go to a show. I listen to phenomenal music. I see an amazing light show. I do like a little hippie noodle dance, all kind of, you know, with myself. And I have an amazing time. And so I do little runs like that, and then boom, and it's right back to work.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'm totally on board with that fact. Like when you get a band that's really good, they just know how to play together live and they can just jam out. And, you know, I'm big on that. I love when bands do that. And I think I even mentioned it when you were on in the preseason that I was looking forward to a Chicago trip, and that's come to pass now. Last weekend I went to the Chicago Open Air Festival, and that was a 3-day festival, first festival I've ever been to. And that's, you know, it's different music. It's nothing but hard rock and metal for 3 days. But I mean, yeah, there was security was pretty chill with everything that was going on there. So it was a good time. And I pretty much just like to get wasted. Like, there's nothing better to me than beer and heavy metal. That's what really gets my juices going. So, you know, to a slightly different angle, I totally am with you on the music experience. I love going to shows and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, listen, I was at the very first Monsters of Rock tour. I was I saw Maiden at Madison Square Garden.
Nice. That's one band 1986? I have not seen yet. Oh, that's, I was born that year.
Oh, my God. Well, some dude passed me a joint at that show. So when you were like being squeezed out, I was I was high and listening to Flight of Icarus.
Oh, nice, man. Well, I someday I hope to, you know, say that from your point of view, because Maiden is one band that I have not seen. And I look forward to that. I guess they've never come around here. I'm in, you know, Bismarck, North Dakota. We don't get a whole hell of a lot around here, so I haven't heard of them coming anywhere near here for a long time. But hopefully one day. I'm slowly checking all these bands off my bucket list, and this past weekend in Chicago was a pretty good one for that. But anyway, I suppose we should talk about some fantasy stuff here. So enough with the preamble, and on to the amble.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
All right, we're going to start off with one of, if not the more interesting, occurrences, just flat out weird stories that has happened in baseball that I can even remember. Chris Sale chopped up a bunch of throwback jerseys because he didn't like them. He didn't want to wear them. He didn't like the way that they fit. So, I mean, what the hell do you make out of what Chris Sale is doing right now? He was sent home because of this quote-unquote insubordination.
Yeah, you know, you hear a story like that, and you just kind of – I mean, as a fan, as somebody who covers the White Sox in the sense that I cover them for fantasy sports reasons, you know, it's kind of humorous for me. I sit and I hear a story like that, and it totally cracks me up. It really does.
Yeah.
you know, I mean, how could it not? How could it not? But I mean, you know, if you want to look at, like, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, what maybe, you know, the answer is, what could be, is that, you know, that Sale's agent took a phone call like an hour before the game and was told he's not being traded. He's staying with the White Sox and we're going to be sellers and that's what's going to happen. And Sale pitched, his agent told him and he pitched a fit. They hand him an ugly ass jersey and they're like, yeah, this is what you're going to wear. And you're going to stay with the team and you're not going to even sniff the playoffs here. And, yeah. You know, and he got pissed off. I'm sure that, you know, as the season started, all the trade talk was happening, you know, was surrounding him. I'm sure it kind of got to him over the course of the year. And then when you kind of resign yourself to the fact that, you know what, okay, I'm going to get traded. It's going to be to a contender and I'm going to pitch in the playoffs. So, you know, you change your mindset to that and you just accept the fact that you're going to move on from where you're living. And then all of a sudden they pull the rug out from under you and then they're like, oh, sorry, now you're just going down in flames with us. And, you know, good friggin' luck.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be tough for a guy like that. I think players probably do the best that they can to sort of block all the trade talk out, but there's no way that you can. So you just got to kind of put it to the back of your mind. And, you know, obviously it got to him. I can't say I blame him too much. Although, you know, maybe he could have been a little more low-key about venting his frustrations, you know, especially after, you know, in the preseason, that whole debacle with Drake LaRoche and Adam LaRoche and, you know, that whole thing. So, I mean, with the contract that he's on to, I wouldn't necessarily be expected to be traded. I would be surprised if I was him. So, you know.
If he was traded, I mean, you're talking he's got three more years on the deal at, like, for a total of $40 million. I mean, yeah. To get Chris Sale for 3 years, I'm hoping, because I heard the rumor, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the Aroldis Chapman trade, but I heard a rumor that said that the Yankees were actually talking about the possibility of flipping some of the guys they got in the deal to the White Sox for Sale.
Yeah. So that's what I was saying, that you know, it's going to take a hell of a lot with that contract to pry Chris Sale out of their grubby mitts. So,
it's going to be for the White Sox to part with him.
Yeah.
No, I thought you were talking about somebody else picking him up. But you know what? Hey, listen, half my brain is still, you know, sitting on the floor of the fish show. So, you know, who the hell am I?
Yeah. Like we mentioned before the show, too, I'm half under the weather and the other half of me is still in Chicago as well. So this might be an interesting show. We're running on fumes.
I've got a fat lip.
Yeah, Jesse just about murdered himself trying to open a bottle of wine.
I want to share the story. I tried to open up a bottle of wine. I like to drink wine during the show for some reason, but I have this electric wine cork opener, so I screwed it down in there. And normally, it takes me a few good pulls to even get that thing to start sliding. One grip, one pull. Right in the mouth. It hit me right in the back. All of a sudden, I could feel blood dripping out. I thought it was out of my nose. Then my wife comes down and says, hey, you got a big cut on your lip. And, yeah, so I got a big fat lip and a nice big cut around my lip.
Oh, man. Yeah, we're in tough shape tonight, but we're going to power through. But you did have you had a great segue back there, Howard, as far as the Aroldis Chapman news, because that's next up on our list. We've got Aroldis Chapman being traded from the Yankees to the Cubs for a slew of prospects, Gleyber Torres being the primary piece coming back to the Yankees, also Adam Warren and Billy McKinney and Rashad Crawford. And I'm not sure that there's really a whole lot of you know, analysis as far as this goes. I think a lot of it is pretty obvious. You know, this we sort of knew that Chapman was going to be finding a new home before the trade deadline was up. You know, he's going to close now in Chicago. We've already seen that Andrew Miller is back. You know, he got a save last night, so he's going to be your closer as far as, you know, the Yankees are concerned once again. So just based on the trade, like, was this sort of what you expected as far as a return for Aroldis Chapman?
Yeah, that's kind of a tough one. It really is. I mean, you know, obviously the Yankees aren't picking up, you know, a penny off of that. McKinney and I just blanked on the other dude's name, the non-Torres guy.
Oh, Adam Warren?
No.
Crawford.
No. Oh, Crawford. Yeah, Rashad Crawford.
Yep.
So neither Crawford nor McKinney blow me away as far as being prospects go. Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at what they've been doing in the lower levels right now, you know, I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed with plate discipline. I'm not impressed with any kind of real power. You know, Crawford's got some speed, but, you know, I mean, those two guys, it doesn't really – I don't know. It doesn't impress me very much. Gleyber Torres, I mean, aside from the fact that he's got the best name this side of Pokey Reese, you know, he's – I mean, listen, he's a great prospect. But I mean, he's a prospect. You know, he's 19 years old, and you know, a lot can happen between now and when he actually does get called up. I think they've got Gregorius under contract for like another 3 seasons, and they're kind of expecting that Gregorius can just fill in until, and then all of a sudden, then Torres is supposed to be ready in 3 years and slide right in there. So. You know, I mean, I'm not really that enamored with it. I think it's a good try for the Yankees. And, you know, it's probably – I mean, to be able to turn around and maybe flip a guy like Torres, because, again, so much can happen between now and when he gets called up eventually, mm-hmm. that, you know, I mean, he's a good blue chipper that you can kind of toss around and, as far as trade bait goes if you do want to make a big move somewhere else. So – It's a decent haul. The Yankees weren't exactly dealing from strength because everybody was like, well, you're either going to get rid of Chapman or you're going to get rid of Miller. So, you know, one of those two are, you know, you're going to have to do. So I think that kind of allowed the Cubs to pull back. I don't mind the reacquisition of Warren. I don't really think the Yankees wanted to let him go in the first place. So, you know, I think that because they know him a little bit better, I mean, he hasn't been having a very good season at all this year, but – Yeah. I think that, you know, the Yankees know him well enough that maybe they can fix what's going on with him and he can improve. So good trade for the Yankees. Does it blow me away? No, not really. But, you know, we got a guy named Gleyber. We got a guy named Didi and a guy named Gleyber. I mean, this is.
Yeah, I mean, Didi Gregorius he's the next coming of Derek Jeter, right?
Stop it. Stop it. Come on.
Oh, I got it. I mean, those words were said once upon a time.
Oh, I know, right? And you're just like, how stupid do people have to be? I mean, that's just overreaction beyond belief.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I think it's a solid return. Certainly they got more than they paid to get Aroldis from the Reds. So it's a net positive, you know, in that regard as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, we'll move on to another big trade that just came down this morning. Melvin Upton has been traded to the Blue Jays in return for Hansel Rodriguez. No word yet on whether Gretel will be joining him. But what do you think about this deal? What's the biggest takeaway here for you fantasy-wise?
That B.J. Upton's value is hopefully now going to go back to it being B.J. Upton value.
Mm.
I'm not going to call him Melvin. I mean, it's just insane. But, you know, listen, the thing about it is with Upton, I mean, he was, you know, hitting the crap out of the ball. He's playing so far above his norm that, you know, everybody's just been waiting for the other shoe to drop. If he stays in San Diego, then he's just going to keep playing. Now he goes off to Toronto, and I got to be honest with you, I don't necessarily see him staying as a full-time player now. I mean, I think that, you know, with what Toronto's got in their outfield right now, I mean, I don't know, is Joey Bats even back? Is he healthy?
He just came back. He was just reinstated on Monday, I believe.
Okay, so, you know, you've got a rotating spot at DH, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Kevin Pillar, Michael Saunders, they're going to want to get Ezekiel Carrera in there. Batista's going to turn around to them. He's going to be like, oh, I want to play the field. He doesn't want to just be a DH. He's always been like that. And, I mean, listen, you have to take into consideration that Edwin Encarnacion is not a guy who can play the field every day. He's not. He's never been, you know, since his days in Cincinnati, he's always been one to attract injuries. So, you know, I feel like Upton is going to end up losing out because of that. And listen, if he gets cold, if he comes back to the American League and he gets a little chilly, it's kind of interesting then, because, you know, then all of a sudden he rides the pine a little bit. He doesn't play right, you know, every single day. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I feel like, you know, like you said, you've sort of been waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it's sort of funny that, you know, and I was on the ITL Writers Room podcast, and those guys were actually still sort of on board with the new Melvin Upton. I respectfully disagreed. I saw him as basically the ultimate sell high. And I still think that should have been the case, you know, assuming that you could have sold him, you know, with his on pace numbers, you know, a guy who could go 25, 40, you know, something like that, even without a superb batting average or anything like that. But hopefully you got what you could for him, because I think, like you said, I mean, I just think he's going to lose some playing time now. And I think there's a chance that he could get out of his groove, you know, being switched around all over the place, platooning here, platooning there. And it's going to be kind of a, you know, fluid situation as far as playing time goes in Toronto. So I'm off it. I'm excited for the Padres to, you know, get anything back for him. That's a win for them. I feel like I feel kind of bad for them. You know, they got this new management and they made all these big moves and everybody was really excited, and none of those moves have worked out at all, except for, you know, now we're seeing Will Myers finally be awesome now that he's healthy. But all told, I'd say net negative for Melvin Upton. So
yeah, you know, I will say this. The one thing that could save him is the fact that it is the Rogers Center. And I mean, listen, I could hit a home run in the Rogers Center. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it's basically the equivalent of Coors Field, East. And if it wasn't, then you wouldn't see FanDuel prices fluctuating again during home games in Toronto. So, you know, they do that with Coors Field right now, and then they've started doing it a little bit with the Blue Jays, with the Toronto games. So, you know, that could kind of help him out. I don't know, maybe seeing the ball a little bit better, and then the loss of playing time will be made up for a little bit with just decent stats. But God, man, I hate this guy.
Yeah, I think you have to get in line on that one. Yeah, that's an interesting point on the home runs. I mean, this year he had a 19.3% home run per fly ball, which is well over his career average of 12%. So maybe, you know, hitting Rogers Center now will help him, you know, sort of maintain those home runs. Maybe he can maintain a little bit higher of a home run per fly ball. He's never really had a favorable home park before, you know, playing with the Rays and the Braves and, you know, and then the Padres. So it's really the first favorable park that he's got. So we'll see. Maybe he can use that to his advantage and keep his value afloat a little bit.
I hope he dies like a dog. Right.
Well, we know Howard's opinion on him. We'll see if you're a little more rosy on David Dahl, who the Rockies just called up. He was 1-for-4 in his debut last night. In two levels across the minor leagues this season, he slashed .314, .394, .569 with 18 home runs. And he was 17-for-24 in stolen base attempts. So what do you see from David Dahl for the rest of the season?
Well, listen, if he's going to play, obviously being in Colorado is going to be a huge boost to him. You know, I mean, listen, his isolated power numbers really took a jump this year, starting off in AA. And then, you know, I mean, he just went on that great power tear down in AAA as well. So, you know, I think that he can hit for some decent power. I'm a little nervous about his plate discipline. I mean, if you look at his strikeout rate in the minors, yeah, you know, it was like in AAA, he dramatically cut it. And I think he was like down to like 15-16%. But if you look at anything before there, it was like 25%, 28%, 32%, 39%. I mean, you know, I mean, it was bad. And it'd be nice to see that he is, you know, seeing the ball a little bit better. But you got to figure that coming up, you know, now, and if he is really going to genuinely get regular playing time, you know, his strikeouts are going to be high, and his you know, could have good solid power. I'm not going to say it's going to be phenomenal, but you know, solid enough, but kind of a crappy average.
Yeah, you know, hopefully, like you said, with Coors, you know, that'll sort of be a buffer. And maybe it won't be as bad. You can at least play him at home. But I am left a little curious as to why they did decide to call him up. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, they're contending or anything. It's not like, you know, maybe they just wanted a spark. But it seems like a little bit of a waste service time-wise. And like you said, he had plenty to work on as far as the strikeout rate is concerned, unless, you know, within their organization they really saw something click for him at AAA this season. But, yeah, still a lot of strikeouts. You know, a nice power-speed combination. So for fantasy purposes, between that and, you know, just playing half your games – you know, in Coors, I think that merits an ad pretty much in all leagues. But, you know, like you said, I mean, I'll echo your sentiments as far as the strikeout rate. That can really affect your batting average. So I think I still would spend a decent chunk of fab on him, because if they're going to call him up, you know, and hopefully give him full time at bats, you know, they'll still. I don't know. Do you think we're going to see, to ask another question here, do you think we're going to see Cargill?
Well, that'd be interesting. I mean, there's always been talk about it, and you know, I don't think the Rockies have anything to lose by, you know, trying to trade Cargo while they can. You know, I mean, I'm sure that there's not really a huge demand for him, just given, you know, when you look at guys like, you know, when you look at a guy like what Corey Dickerson did this year with the Rays, yes. And then you're like, oh, okay, so you know, yeah, we should have paid more attention to his home and away splits, that now all of a sudden everybody's looking at Cargo's home and away splits, and they're like, well, I mean, do we want to pay full price for this, or do, you know, yeah, should we wait until the Rockies get like super desperate?
Yeah, and I mean, this would be the time to sell him, you know, when he had that tremendous second half last year. He's been healthy now for you know, over a full season. Basically, the second that I traded him away in all my leagues, he just went on a huge tear. So this is really the prime time to sell them. Like you said, maybe the market just isn't there and it won't line up. But we're going to continue on. We got a slew of call-ups here. We're going to move on to a guy that we touched on last week a little bit. We talked some Astros after their signing of Yulieski Gurriel. And now they have officially called up Alex Bregman, who last night in his debut, he hit sixth, went 0-for-4 with two strikeouts. And in tandem with his getting called up, A.J. Reed was demoted after hitting just 156, 250, 289 with two bombs and a whopping 36.5% strikeout rate. So before we swing back around on Reed, let's touch on Alex Bregman. Do you see him making a big impact in the second half?
I think that he can make an impact. I think that there's good power to be had there. Here's a guy who actually has shown some really nice plate discipline in the minor leagues. I mean, you know, he's never had a strikeout rate, you know, higher than 15%. So, you know, you kind of have to enjoy. I mean, granted, there's not like a huge sample size, but you know, you just have to like a kid who doesn't, you know, who's got some good plate discipline. You know, it's going to be growing pains for him, and I think that there's going to be very high expectations. I could see him starting slow, and then, you know, kind of people just sort of back off him a little bit, and then all of a sudden he like gets really hot for like a 2-week stretch, and then, you know, everybody who, you know, has been stashing Bregman gets to unload all their fluids in their, you know, bathroom or whatever they want to do. And then all of a sudden Bregman just gets back to normal. I think he's going to be a good guy to have. I think they like his glove, you know, a little bit. I think they're more excited about his glove than really his bat. I think that they, you know, feel that he can be a stable bat, and that's why they're going to going to go with him. But I mean, listen, the Astros have a great history of judging their young talent and knowing when they're ready. You know, Correa is not having a phenomenal season, but he did beautifully last year, and he's not terrible this year. Right. You know, same with Springer. So they do a good job with that and monitoring these kids. So, you know, I don't think that they're expecting the world from Bregman like most overexcited fantasy owners are, but I think that they're like, okay, he's ready to contribute, and, you know, we can continue to make a playoff run with him.
Yeah, excellent points there. Yeah, I mean, definitely they seem to be one of the better teams, you know, that are more in tune with their prospects as far as knowing when they're ready. And, I mean, I think even just scouting the box scores, you could tell that Bregman was just chopping at the bit, and you saw him just crush the ball at the Futures game as well. He put on a really impressive show there. And like you said, I mean, the Astros are a team that strikes out so much that it really – will benefit them to get some solidity in there. A guy that doesn't strike out a lot, makes a lot of contact, you know, just profiles as a really great on-base asset. And they've been hitting him six so far since he got called up. So not, you know, not putting too much pressure on him just yet. And they don't have to either. You know, they're still loaded at the top of that lineup with Springer, Altuve, Correa, you know, so I think eventually you'll see him, you know, hitting towards the top of that lineup as well. Maybe they can continue to hit Altuve second or third, and I personally would rather see George Springer and his power hitting a little bit lower, you know, maybe cleanup in that lineup. But I really do think that Bregman could be an impact bat over the second half, and you know, just work his way up and get you a bunch of runs. And while when he was drafted, I wasn't necessarily crazy. I missed out on him. I was not crazy about his profile just because he didn't offer either a ton of power or speed. You know, I kind of like to look at one of those big glaring tools. So, you know, but I've come around on him. Obviously, he's hit every level, and you know, I've stashed him in a deeper league. So I am excited to plug him into my lineup and see what he can do. And I think he's worth an add in all but the shallowest of leagues.
I definitely agree. He's a must add just to try him out. You know, it's funny. On Fantasy Alarm, Ray Flowers, you know, writes his articles, and I was looking at his rookie article. And I was just, you know, I was just kind of disappointed in a lot of aspects of it because, you know, Ray's never been one that's been heavy on the rookies or stashing rookies or anything like that. And I think that he was, you know, really down on a lot of prospects, you know, guys who really didn't do anything this year. You know, like he's already considered Bregman a failure because Bregman wasn't called up in May right after Super 2 in June, I mean. So, you know, the fact that he hasn't produced anything for you does not make him a failure. So, you know, you're talking about a guy who's going to get the playing time, who has shown the club enough that he is deserving of a shot here. So why isn't he not deserving of a shot on your fantasy team? I'm not saying that you turn around and you drop, you know, Dustin Pedroia for him.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that you turn around and, you know, you drop, you know, some sort of productive player. But if you've got the room and you've got a spot where you're like, I'm never going to use this guy.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I?
That's right. You know, it's a lot about the acquisition cost. And, you know, yeah, if he's a guy who's like who you don't necessarily even need the stats from, you don't even need him to start. If you can add him for nothing, you know, and just sort of keep him stashed like you've already had in most leagues. You know, I have him in a 20 team league. I'm basically in the position to take a wait and see approach with him. I don't need him in my lineup. So ideally that's, you know, the situation that you're adding him in. Of course, there's plenty of desperate teams maybe that are sort of on the cusp of the playoffs, sort of teetering on the brink there, and they need a spark. So, you know, maybe you can get a flash in the pan from Bregman this year and he'll actually hit, because it's been a really disappointing season as far as rookies go, especially compared to last year. And that ties into AJ Reed, who just got demoted. I gave his numbers a little bit ago. And that sort of ties in with the only knocks that were on him coming into the draft is teams didn't really know how he was going to fare against really advanced pitching. And we saw him struggle in his first taste. You know, against truly advanced pitching at the major leagues. He's back in AAA and already crushing again. So do you think AJ Reed will recoup his value? And what do you see from him as far as his career goes?
You know, if you judge a rookie on what his first, you know, go around in the major leagues for, and you give up on the guys who do poorly, well, nobody would own Mike Trout right now.
Yep.
So, you know, listen, we knew. We knew when Reed was coming up, we knew that he was a, you know, that he was a guy that was going to strike out a lot. He's got good power, but he's going to have a crappy batting average. You know, we're in this day and age now in baseball, and fantasy owners know this. You look at batting average overall numbers now versus where they were last year, where they were 5 years ago, where they were 10 years ago. We're in a day and age where it's big power, big strikeouts. We don't give a crap about your batting average. It's Earl Weaver baseball. It's give me the three-run home run and swing for the fences. If you don't swing for the fences, you know, I'm going to go ballistic. Weaver used to go ballistic on guys who used to get called out on strikes. You did not want to go back to the dugout and see Earl Weaver if you got punched out with the bat on your shoulder. Yeah. So, you know, and I think that we've accepted that. Chris Bryant, Chris Davis, Nelson Cruz, you know,
Miguel Sano.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, we've learned that this is the way it is and we've accepted it. So, you know, for AJ Reed, he was struggling. He wasn't making contact. It's going to be an issue for him. He's going to go back to the minors and he's going to work on it. He's going to improve his batting, you know, his batter's eye, and he's going to try and cut down the strikeouts. He's going to try and be a little bit more selective. As long as he knows that that's the issue, well, then it's a teachable thing. I mean, if he doesn't get it in the minors and the strikeout rate stays high, like, you know, obnoxiously high, well, then you have to worry about, you know, his long-term value. But I mean, if you see, you know, if you go back and you look at his numbers for the second half and, you know, you start seeing even just a little bit of improvement, that's hope on the horizon for him.
Yeah, it's absolutely foolish to write him off. And this is right about the time where I like to send a lowball offer to the AJ Reed owner. You know, after, oh God, now your hopes and dreams are just crushed. He made his big – he's been waiting all season for this major league debut. You know, he's supposed to be one of the most impact rookies, and God, he just sucked. So let me just take this guy off your hands after they have a sour taste in their mouth. You know, he does need to work on he's never hit lefties well, so he does need to work on that. But, you know, you look at a guy like Anthony Rizzo, how bad he was against lefties, and guess what? He's pretty good now. So you just got to be patient with these guys. So with that, let's move on to another call-up. We had a whole slew of them this week. Braden Shipley, the next one we're going to touch on, he got the call for the Diamondbacks. He had his debut last night as well, gave up 6 earned runs in 5 1/3 innings on 8 hits with 4 walks and 4 strikeouts. So does he tickle your fancy, Mr. Bender?
No, I wouldn't say he tickles my fancy. My fancy – what tickles my fancy? Goodness.
Dare I ask.
You know, listen, I think that he's a decent pitcher. He doesn't have he's never had an overwhelming strikeout rate. You look at his minor league numbers, and I mean, you know, those are guys that I'm looking for. I want to see the guy who's got the really high strikeout rate, regardless of what his walk rate is, because if you've got the really strong strikeout numbers, which is what you need for fantasy. I mean, listen, if you're going to have low strikeout numbers, you better have a sub 2.5 ERA. In order to make an impact in the fantasy world. So if you're not striking out, you know, 7-8 batters a game, well, then it's, you know, it's kind of a problem. And then you look at his numbers in the, you know, his K per nine over the last 2 seasons has been under 7. And if that's the way it is in double A and triple A, I mean, who wants that? Not me.
No, me neither. I mean, that's, you know, it sucks for all the people who are waiting on him in Dynasty. But, yeah, if you're getting such far below, you know, if you're getting Doug Fister-like strikeout numbers, you know, you saw what happened to Blair for the Braves earlier this year. You know, he was a guy who he wasn't striking out a ton of guys either, not showing elite command, at least at the major league level. It was a lot better in the minor leagues, but he got just absolutely destroyed. And I could really see that happening with Braden Shipley. He doesn't even have the buffer of a nice home park, you know, like you do in Atlanta. So I'm very tepid on him as well. You know, I think he's just a straight up pass for me. So maybe we'll get a little bit more excitement with the next guy, Raul Mondesi. As Whit Merrifield was sent down, he had a nice start, but had been really sputtering over the last couple weeks. So the Royals added Raul Mondesi, 3 levels of the minors this year. He's slashed 268, 322, 469 with 7 bombs, primarily a stolen base threat, 24 for 25 in stolen base attempts on the season. So what type of leagues, if any, are you adding Raul Mondesi in?
You know, I mean, it's got to be a fairly deep league. I mean, it's, you know, the numbers are good. They're solid in the minors. I'm not going to, you know, take anything away from it. But, you know, I mean, again, strikeouts are a big deal, I believe. And it's there's really – I think anybody who's got the ability to swipe 10 to 12 bags is going to have value because of the way stolen bases are down this year.
Sure.
So if you think that Mondesi can do that for you and you're in a – I don't know, a 14-team league? Yeah. I just don't know if, like, I just don't think that a 12 he's worth owning in a 12-team league. I think you're going to end up dropping, you know, a more productive player. You know, you're probably like, you're like, oh, do I drop Mitch Moreland or, you know, in order to pick up Mondesi? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the question is, you want a guy who's going to hit you 8 home runs? Is that more, you know, more important, or a guy who may steal you 10 bases? So, yeah, I kind of feel like maybe a leagues of 14 teams or more, he's worth an ad for that, but nothing more shallow than that.
Yep, I'm right there with you as far as just not a shallow league guy for me. He's never been a huge hit tool guy, you know, no more for his defense, sort of like a Francisco Lindor who has wildly exceeded my expectations. You know, I was never huge on him.
Dude, everybody's expectations. What he's doing is just, I mean, that – really, really. I mean, it's blowing everybody away. And if anybody's out there being like, oh, I knew that Lindor was going to do this the whole time, then they're full of crap. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just he was definitely a guy that was going to be known for his glove. And the fact that he's hitting for power like he still is, you know, blows me away.
Yeah, I mean, that's I always preach that, you know, you should watch out for these type of defensive first guys that you see at the top of the you know, top 100 prospect lists, it's because of their defense. You know, if you're playing fantasy, you can't just, you know, draft right off of those lists. You know, you got to look at their hit tool and their power tool and such and so forth. And Mondesi, yeah, I mean, if he pulls a Lindor, then fine. You know, that's kind of the thing where I'm fine with it. Like, in a shallow league, if I miss out on it, then so be it. But I'm really not expecting the hit tool to click, at least not this year. Never been an on-base guy. A lot of strikeouts, like you said. So, I mean, the only thing is, like you said, you know, if you're in a deeper league and you just need cheap speed, there you go. You know, that might be an answer. But otherwise, I am not interested in the Mondesi. So on the flip side, going to Texas, a power guy who has absolutely no speed to speak of. Joey Gallo has been recalled. In the minor leagues, he's had a really turbulent year at AAA. He started off really strong with the plate discipline. He was walking just about as much as he was striking out. However, now he's got over a 30% strikeout rate, slashing only .246. Still walking a ton, a .381 OBP and .557 slug, 19 home runs at AAA. So looks like he's going to get some first base going on. So do you think that he's going to hold value for the rest of the season?
Should be interesting. I mean, it's going to depend on what his defense does look like, you know, at first, combined with, you know, how his bat is. You know, again, here's another guy that we can, you know, lump into the, you know, high strikeouts, great power. You know, I think that, you know, if Texas is really going to, you know, make a push and win this division and go to the playoffs, then you know, I just don't know if Gallo plays every day. You know, I know you lost Prince Fielder for the, you know, the whole long haul, but you're dealing still with Profar and you know, and what he's going to do. You've got, you know, Delino DeShields who, you know, I mean, should start getting some more regular playing time. I mean, you know, you've got a guy now that you're going to kind of mix in there. And that was probably what Texas's big problem was this year, is that they had these guys and they were like, well, we can move him over to here. We can move this guy over to here. And, you know, and guys were kind of, you know, just rotating in, you know, when Fielder was out. So I think that they do more of that. I would like to see him get the regular at-bats just to see what he can do. He's a must add, I think, in 12-team leagues just for his power potential. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I would like to see it, but I kind of feel like, you know, I kind of feel like it draws more of a chance that Moreland gets the regular time at first base just because he's more seasoned defensively than really Gallo's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the the whole offensive roster for the Rangers has been one of the most intriguing rosters to follow this entire year, as much as they've been flip-flopping around. You know, you got Chu in there for the occasional at-bat in between getting hurt, and Ian Desmond moving from left to center, and DeShields going up and down. You know, it's been really interesting, and I think that we will see an extended look at Gallo either through trade or, well, yeah, through trade one way or the other. You know, whether they get rid of him or whether they move somebody else to free up full-time at-bats for him. I really just don't see them not making a move for another pitcher before the deadline. And, you know, you've got some, you know, like Ryan Rua and DeShields. They're both, you know, really strong against lefties, not so much against righties. There's a lot of different platoon options that you can have there. And then you got Profar that can play all over the field. So I think one way or another, I would definitely be adding Gallo as well based on the power potential. You know, if you've dealt with a guy like Mike Napoli, who's just got a crap, you know, even Albert Pujols, who's, they've both got really just crappy batting averages, but they're putting up the power numbers. You know, if you can roster guys like that, then I don't see why Joey Gallo couldn't crack your starting lineup in a 12-team league.
Yeah, so. Agreed. Definitely agree.
All right, so if you had to pick one of these guys that you were most excited about with all these call-ups between Dahl, Bregman, Shipley, Mondesi, and Gallo, which one are you adding? Like, who's got your number one waiver claim amongst those guys?
Out of that group of guys, I would probably say Bregman.
Yeah.
I would list him first there, and then I'm torn between Gallo and Dahl. I'd probably say Bregman, Gallo, and then Dahl, as far as that ends up going, just because, you know, I mean, Coors Field, ignoring that and just, you know, looking at what Gallo can potentially do. I mean, here's a guy who could literally, he could hit a home run every game. I mean, he won't, but I mean, he's just got that innate power stroke to be able to do something like that. So I like that upside there.
Yep, I'm on board with you, man. I'm right there. So we are going to do something a little bit different. I forgot to mention at the top of the podcast, but what is going to happen next is we're going to do our ad, and then we're going to hear from Harvey Dinkelman. But what we're going to do after that, instead of our typical BS, we're actually going to talk football with the great Howard Bender. And that's, I believe, a first for the podcast. So we're going to take a break. We're going to hear from Harvey Dinkelman, and we'll be back with some football action.
Hello again, folks. Harvey Dinkelman here with your Killer Dilla Pickup of the Week. This week's hot ad is Hernan Perez of the Milwaukee Brewers. He's so talented that he qualifies at both second and third base, and the name of the game here is Cheap Speed. Perez has himself a good pair of stilts, stealing 14 bases in his 181 plate appearances this season. His plate discipline will make you want to go on a toot, but he's managed a .274 batting average thanks to his wheels. He's also shown representative power to boot, smashing 5 home runs at the major league level this season. He hits mainly at the bottom of the order, which keeps him from a Jonathan Villar level ceiling, so while Perez is an ad, he's best left for deep leaguers in need of speed. Again, that was Hernan Perez of the Milwaukee Brewers. Reporting for the NastyCast, this is Harvey Dinkelman signing off.
Alrighty. So we're back, and this is going to harken back to our glory days, Jesse. Maybe a few Bucketeers out there know, but Jesse and I, we actually, before we ever did the NastyCast, we got our podcasting start. Basically, we did a football podcast based off of our home league. You know, we do an auction league, Howard, and we loved it so much. We're so passionate about it. We're like, you know what? We should do a weekly podcast and just talk about, like, who we think is going to win the matchups and, like, who was just a dumbass and spent, you know, $60 to pick up Rudy Johnson off the waiver wire after he retired 2 years ago. That kind of thing. Just ridicule them mercilessly. And that sort of morphed into baseball over time. So this is pretty exciting. So, I don't know. Jesse, are you excited to finally talk football again? Or let you out of your cage?
I have been begging for this moment for a long time, because we baseball season's so damn long that once these guys, you know, we got into baseball, you know, I took the back seat and said, you know, you guys go ahead and drive. I know how to produce. I know how to edit. I can get the show out there to everybody. And that, you know, and then as long as we can do some BS every once in a while, I'll be a part of it. But I've been begging for football forever. But what sucks about it is I've got my opinions, obviously, you know, already and stuff like that, but I haven't done a whole lot of mock drafting. So when it comes to some of these questions, all I've got is, you know, looking at ADP numbers. I haven't actually put any of my strategies into practice yet or anything like that. So hopefully I don't sound like too much of an idiot, but it's going to be fun to talk football.
Yeah, well, it is rather early, at least in my opinion. Usually I don't switch into full-on football mode until August hits, you know, it's, you know, the training camp's popping up and everything. But, you know, I've been on football already for, what, like 3 weeks now. So
before, brutal, isn't it?
I used to make my Sunday appearance for the Fantastics radio show, and all of a sudden word came down, well, guess what, guys, this is our last week. And they're like, what? We're switching to football already?
Before this, we ever started doing the Nasty Cast, I'd say about July 15th or so, I'd start getting football on. Nowadays, it's normally August 1st, probably. But this year, we have a late start. Our first games aren't until like September 8th. The first, I think it's like September 11th is our first Sunday of football. So,
yeah.
Seems like, I mean, normally it's, I shouldn't say it's late, but I'd say it's got to be close to about as late as it possibly can be.
Yeah, it seems a little different. So I should say for the regular listeners out there, this will be the end of the fantasy baseball. So if you only listen to that, then and you don't give a crap about football, then there's nothing more for you from this point on. So you have been warned. This is all football from the rest of the point on. So I'm actually super stoked to talk about this, and I'm also super stoked to be working with you at Fantasy Alarm, Howard. And one thing that you are known for over there is being the general of the mock draft army. So why don't you talk about that a little bit and how the people can get involved with it?
All right. So the Mock Draft Army is just to give the quick summation. It's I run roughly between 5 and 8 mock drafts a week of different varieties, different, you know, 12 teamers, 14 teamers, 15 rounds, 20 rounds. We try and do, you know, some dynasty stuff. But basically I started the whole thing because, you know, you go to any of these main websites, you go to ESPN, you go to Yahoo, and you go and do one of their mock drafts, and you end up with like 5 computer players in a 12-team league. You get guys that draft up until the 5th or 6th round, and then they walk away. So ADP numbers that were being, you know, touted by people were garbage. They were just basically an extension of the default rankings for the website. So I wanted to – not only did I want to build up my own ADP and really get a firm grasp on public perception of players, but I wanted, you know, you guys out there that are listening, that read all of our stuff, to get the opportunity to draft side by side with, you know, guys like me, guys like Nathan. You know, Ray Flowers does them. Jeff Manns does them. I mean, you know, whatever. You know, smeared all across the industry. Everybody, you know, does these mock drafts with me. And, you know, the whole purpose, you know, behind it for you guys is so that you can, you know, you can turn around and you can ask all the questions that you want to know. Why did you take him there? What do you think this guy's going too early? So I built it all up as a tool, and all you have to do is email me at mockdraftarmy@yahoo.com and, you know, give me a follow on Twitter at RotoBuzzGuy and just tell me you want in. And I add you to a scheduled distribution list. It goes out every Sunday night, maybe Monday morning, depending on how I'm feeling Sunday night. Yeah. You know, maybe there's like a remote chance that, you know, my wife will like actually put out. So I'll, you know, kind of be delayed.
You got to put the Mock Draft Army on the back burner for that one.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, for at least 5 to 7 minutes.
Oh, that's impressive.
You know, hey, sometimes these are just for me. That's what I tell her.
Sometimes you're counting for the 5 to 7 minutes of. Does that include the nap afterwards?
It includes the walk to the bedroom, the walk out of the bedroom, and to the refrigerator.
There you go. You're free.
So
yeah. I like to pretend that I run the bases after every time I score. I have Big Poppy type speed, so it takes you know, that's an extra 3.5 minutes right there. I really enjoy myself there.
Slide afterwards. Slide.
Absolutely.
It's always,
yeah.
of, It's always also kind of tough to get going because once we close the door, then the dog starts pawing at the door.
Oh, boy.
And then they start whining, and then one of them's a wolf hybrid, and then he howls.
Oh, wow. That would do it for me right there. I'd be like, man, the animals, the wolves are howling for me. I got to put up a good performance for this. That would get me going.
I hear that and I'm done. I'm like, I'm out. Thanks, son.
Do your neighbors nickname your wife Lassie?
Yeah, right? Like, remember the movie Porky's back in the day?
That's exactly what I was thinking about. that howl is not getting blamed on the dog.
No, it's definitely not. But so anyway, so on Sunday nights I send out the schedule distribution list, and you know, you guys just email me back again, mockdraftarmy@yahoo.com. Email me, you tell me which draft or drafts you want to do, and I'll send you the invite for that, and you're all hooked up, and then you know you're then mocking side by side with Nathan and Jesse.
There you go. Hey, yeah, and I'm going to take part in Thursday at 7, the PPR mock draft there. So I don't know if that's full yet or not, but if it's not, then go check that out. You can draft with me.
I'm throwing.
They're all full this week.
Oh,
so I'll try to get myself my email in there before next week, so I can try to get in one. So I need to start practicing.
Yeah, I mean, I learned. I've only done the one so far. I learned quite a bit from it. And so I've got to ask, I'm not sure how many you've done yet, Howard, but, I was curious as to at this point, anyway, heading into the season, what player or maybe players, do you find yourself taking in like almost every mock draft? What are the guys that you're ending up with all the time?
You know, the guy that I keep ending up with, you know, here's the funny thing, and this is what I have to, you know, a strategy that I've employed in mock drafts, and you know, because I do so many of them, the number of drafts that I've done already right now, it's more than 40.
Oh my God.
Between like magazine mocks and this site wants, you know, to do a quick mock and whatnot. So yeah, I've been, you know, around them and through them. I actually, at some point or another, and it's probably going to be in about a week or two, where I'll just go in there to a draft and I won't take a single guy that I love. I won't take a single guy that I usually take because I just want to make sure. Am I reaching for him because I love the guy so much? And I'll tell you, the one guy that I have drafted virtually every time and I had to just kind of stop recently is Sterling Shepard. Yeah, you know, listen, I'm not big on the rookies, but I just feel that with what McAdoo is going to do with this offense, that I think Eli is going to have a breakout year, just like a really, really strong year for Eli. Not necessarily going to be a career best, but I think that it's going to be a very strong year for him. With Josh Norman in Washington seeing the Giants twice, with the number of double teams that Beckham Jr. is going to end up seeing, I don't have any faith in Victor Cruz coming back, which leaves Sterling Shepard to be that guy, to be the one that you rely on. He'll move the chains. He will get his touchdowns. You know, to equate it, really, I've been equating it to if you want to say Amari Cooper and Odell Beckham, well, then that means Sterling Shepard and Michael Crabtree. And if Sterling Shepard can give me the numbers that Crabtree gave me last year, whew, gonna be tasty.
Nice. I like that one. Yeah. Even though I'm a Cowboys fan, so that hurts me to think that he will provide a lot of offense. I mean, obviously that Cowboys defense is just it shall be shredded like a tender pork butt consistently. So what's that, Jesse?
Do you predict the Giants to kind of swap those guys around? Put line, you know, not just put Shepard truly at the slot, but you know, throw him out wide every once in a while. He's got a lot of speed, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, I definitely think that they'll move him all over the place. Actually, you know, I think that, you know, they'll try and move Beckham around more just to kind deal with the matchups. But Beckham's going to see so much specialty coverage that moving around Shepard, you know, lining him out wide, putting him in the slot, whatever. It's just that's going to be where Eli is going to end up. That's going to be like his default. He's going to look for Beckham. And once that Beckham's, you know, you know, yeah, covered, he's immediately to Shepard, no matter where he is, where he's lined up.
And he likes to force the ball too. I love quarterbacks that, or I like wide receivers with quarterbacks that like to force the ball.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. So,
what about you, Jesse? Have you done any mock drafts yet?
I that's what I opened up with. So I can't even add in here.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you'd done even one. I've only done one myself.
Yeah,
so
I can't really say. There's really no point for me to try to say every mock draft, because unless you've done a few of them at least, there's really
right.
No,
yeah.
Point, so.
I will say, as far as to transition into a slightly different point, as far as the guy who I'm targeting and who I did end up with my first mock draft, guy who I love his new situation. I knew as soon as I read this sighting that I cited the signing, and I fell in love immediately with the fit, and that's Ladarius Green going to the Steelers. I'm typically a guy, I love me some Gronk, love him. My favorite player in the whole league. The dude's just hilarious and awesome. And I usually try to get him if I can. If not, I've typically been a guy who just pretty much waits till the end. But Green, I want to say I got him in the eighth round. I'm not entirely sure on that. Don't quote me. I don't remember 100%. But I think that especially due to sort of the lack of offensive weapons now, you know, with the suspension of Bryant in Pittsburgh, I think due to lack of options, Green is going to see a lot of red zone targets. I think he could get double-digit touchdowns. Maybe that's pie in the sky. I don't know. What's your thoughts on Mr. Green?
Well, I thought it was a very good move for him. And one of the things that I had actually said when the move first made, I was like, you know, God, this dude got hyped up so much in San Diego that he was going to be the heir apparent to Antonio Gates. And he never really broke through that. And Gates was still doing a good enough job that they weren't, you know, going with Green. So now he goes to Pittsburgh, and you've got Antonio Brown, and then there's, you know, Martavis Bryant and Marcus Wheaton and Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, you look at the backups like D'Angelo Williams. And I was like, you know, I mean, yeah, he'll be okay, but he's going to be like a sort of like a Heath Miller in the later years, in the sense that there were just too many targets. Well, here, get your editor's bleep out. Now that Le'Veon Bell is with the Steelers like this,
yeah.
And he's really, you know, and Martavis Bryant got suspended for
even
the
worse.
Season.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was like, wow. It's like, oh, just lots of deep dicking for those Steelers fans right now. Just nasty. Oh, it's the Nasty Cast.
Oh, perfect.
Amen.
See that? Look at that. Completely organic.
Wow.
You are the man. I think you might be the first guest to ever drop an F-bomb on the show. So,
well, come on. Isn't that true? Did Le'Veon Bell not fuck these guys or what? I mean,
hey, I'm not complaining. I'm usually mad at these other guys. I'm just happy that a guest finally dropped an F-bomb, because it was needed. It was needed anyways. Le'Veon Bell, yeah. I don't want to edit my own. So.
Yeah.
Right over.
Yep.
He really did. But so now, yes, I agree with you, Nathan. It definitely bumps up Ladarius Green's targets, because, you know, yes, the ground game will be the ground game and D'Angelo Williams will get his work in there. But, you know, no Bryant, you know, and the question is how confident is Big Ben in Marcus Wheaton's hands? So, yeah. I mean, he's obviously going to feed Brown as much as he possibly can, but you know, I'm kind of, you know, in agreement with you in that he really could be – Ladarius Green could be that second target, which would be huge for his value.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking at this point, that I think he's going to be a better target. You know, just a huge dude, just an athletic freak, and I think he presents, you know, a really nice target. I'm just not a Wheaton guy. You know, and so I think that you're going to see just him used as a huge weapon, especially in the red zone. And I'm really liking the Steelers just in general this year. You know, it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to go for two like almost all the time, which is just going to be a huge boost for really everybody on that offense. So obviously it's not like Antonio Brown is going to be widely available. He's going to go probably in the early half of the first round. In pretty much every draft. So in the mid rounds, I think I'm going to try to pepper pepper in some Ladarius Green. I love that fit so much. I've been waiting on him for years and years, and like you said, he's just been blocked by stupid, ageless Antonio Gates who just won't die. Yeah. So
we've had this argument multiple times, Nate, about Ladarius Green and
back when I know you guys always make fun of me because it never happened.
I was always the Gates guy and told you that Green would get his. So no, I'm definitely liking Green this year more because, you know, just looking at Miller's targets the last 3 years, he's at least 75 plus the last 4 years, actually. So I mean, that for a tight end, that's pretty good. And you put athleticism of Ladarius Green in there with that, the guy could definitely do some damage. Although I'm not much as a Wheaton hater as you are, everyone should love the Steelers this year. And after what they did last year, there's just no hating them. As long as Ben stays healthy, I think all of the guys that are, you know, going to be catching the balls are going to be, you know, guys that you will want on your roster. So I can get behind Ladarius Green this year.
Right on. All right. So as you mentioned, Sterling Shepard was falling to you, Howard. So is there anyone that you want to target for all your actual teams heading into the year?
Well, besides Sterling Shepard, who am I targeting?
Not so much a guy that you know is sort of falling into your lap, but more of a guy who you're willing to reach on at this point.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, Shepard is actually slowly becoming that guy,
I suppose.
He really is, but you know, I mean, I'm looking at you know, at some of the names. It's kind of funny. I mean, we're still kind of developing ADP right now, so yeah. Out of all the drafts that I've done, there hasn't been anybody that's just been so, you know, that I'm like, oh, I got to make sure I get them. Everybody kind of seems to be falling where I think they should fall. Now, once camp starts up, then I think, I mean, then it's going to be a, you know, kind of a bigger deal because, you know, I'm looking at, you know, you got Arian Foster, who you're probably, you know, if you're going to want to pick him up, then you're probably going to have to reach a little bit for him. And that's probably going to be like, I mean, right now it's probably like a seventh or a sixth round pick. But once training camp starts up, all of a sudden he becomes fourth, you know, yeah. You know, in that sense. So some of the guys that I'm actually probably going to end up reaching on are a lot more of the handcuff variety. Like I'll reach a little on Tevin Coleman, just in case. I'll reach a little bit on Wendell Smallwood. I'll reach a little bit on Josh Ferguson. I'll reach a little bit for who was the other guy I was just thinking? Oh, Kenyon Drake.
Okay. Yep.
You know. So, you know, I'm looking at these guys and I'm like, ah, you know what? If I take these guys, you know, a round early, and I mean, like, if you're talking about like a 20 round draft, I'm thinking, you know, maybe around like, I don't know, 12th, 13th round, kind of depending on how deep it is. But I mean, those are the guys right now that I'm looking at. But I know that once camp starts up and if they do start performing real well, then, you know, it's going to be even a little worse.
Yeah. All right. So, Jesse, I'll ask this question to you first. You know, obviously Peyton Manning no longer with the Broncos, and he wasn't that great to begin with last year anyway. So do you think, you know, the Broncos offense is basically just going to be a shit show with the Sanchez at quarterback?
I really don't know how to go with this one without getting laughed at.
We're going to laugh at you either way. So
I don't really believe – not that I believe in Mark Sanchez. And I don't think he's going to be, you know, lighting things up. But I can't imagine him being worse than what Peyton was for that receiving core in Denver. It's still Demaryius Thomas. It's still Emmanuel Sanders. Granted, you know, they got Norwood and I think was it Caldwell? Are probably going to be the 3 and 4 there. I'm not sure which one's which. You know, if I mispronounce one of them, well, so be it. That's what I do around here. But anyways, I've always said the guy, whoever comes beyond Peyton Manning, is going to be better for Demaryius Thomas. You know, I thought I looked at the targets last year, but maybe I'm confusing my stats now. But I can't remember what his targets were anymore. But I just can't imagine. Peyton Manning's the type of guy, when he throws the ball, and last year it was very few, very little, you know, especially when he was being dinged up. I just can't imagine D-Train, that's what we like to call him, doesn't get a few more targets. Mark Sanchez is a guy who likes to rely on a tight end and a number one wide receiver. So I don't know how much that means for Emmanuel Sanders or not. And obviously you got your two running backs that I think, you know, with the coaching staff being the same, they're still going to try to pound the ball and rely on their defense and keep that defense intact. Yes, but when Mark Sanchez has to throw the ball, the two guys that, you know, looking back on his stats, that he relies on most is his number one wide receiver and his tight end. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but right now the Denver Broncos depth chart shows a Virgil Green, who's actually been with the Broncos for like 6 or 7 years. So I'm assuming he's their blocking tight end. And he had like, 15 targets last year. So, you know, I don't know if that says dig a little deeper and keep an eye on who's going to start at tight end and be the receiving tight end in Denver or not. And maybe, you know, add those guys in the low end of your drafts. Or that just bumps Demaryius Thomas up even higher. I noticed his ADP is, I think, ridiculously low at let me find it here real quick. I had it up here and everything. A 32, according to Fantasy Pros average, 32 pick overall, which is, what, mid-third round in a 12-man league. I'm taking him as my number two. If I'm one of the first two or three picks in the draft, I'm probably going non-PPR, call me an idiot, I'm still going running back big because, probably going with, well, it would have been Le'Veon Bell, Gurley, Peterson, one of those three right away. And then I'm happy with a guy like Thomas at the end of the second round. Those are what I'm seeing right now. So I guess if the overall question is, will it be a shit show? Yeah, maybe. But Sanchez has thrown for 3,500 yards before, and he likes to throw the ball to tight ends and number one wide receivers. So I say Demaryius Thomas is a guy to go after, and that would be one of my targets going in, especially if he's going in that mid-third round. I'm going to take him above guys like Watkins, Allen, and Cooks. That Cooper Evans area, that's where I'm going to start thinking about it, but I still might take him above Cooper and Evans. So
yeah, man,
that's what I got to say.
Yeah, I agree that I think that the consensus ADP right now is just really low on those wide receivers. I'd be pleased as punch to end up with either of them at their cost at this point, even with Sanchez. And I don't know, maybe if Paxton Lynch flashes in training camp here. Howard, I don't know, what do you think? Do you think that Lynch can usurp the Sanchez and take over that offense?
I don't necessarily know if Lynch can or will, or if the Broncos will just kind of turn to him later on. I mean, you know, all the Simeon hype about, you know, him taking over the job is coming in a lot louder than the Lynch hype. So, you know, I mean, it's an interesting situation, and, you know, it's not one that, you know, do I want to predict it? I think I may or may not. I think I might have said that in the Fantasy Alarm Draft Guide of the bold predictions that the first quarterback to lose his job this year would be Sanchez. Because I don't think that Denver is used to dealing with a losing quarterback. They don't take it well.
I mean, he eats hot dogs like a champ, though.
Well, I mean, which is always a huge, huge bonus.
I love that in a player. I got to say.
Yeah, you definitely love that in a player. It's it's one of the first boxes I like to check.
Absolutely.
When I'm interviewing for quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So I think he will get the chance. I don't hate Sanchez. I don't love him. I'm a Jets fan. I thought that they were a little silly for trading up for him and, you know, kind of got what they, you know, what they should have gotten for that. He had some decent moments. He's had some decent games. So, you know, I think that if he can be mistake free and not, you know, keep his hands on the ball, not force it and end up, you know, with the interceptions, then I think that he'll be okay. As far as what that does for the receivers, listen, the only thing that I disagree with what you were saying, Jesse, was that, you know, if he's got the penchant to go to the number one wide receiver or the tight end as his top two targets, that's also, it depends on the system that he's working in, the play calling that happens. So, you know, I don't necessarily know if I can rely on that. I actually kind of feel like Emmanuel Sanders might be a guy he relies a little bit more heavily on, just in the sense that I think Sanders is the guy who, you know, just he's proven to be that move the chains, trustworthy possession receiver, can come down with the ball in traffic. So, you know, I'm not downgrading the Denver receivers too much because, you know, when you see guys like DeAndre Hopkins prove that he's quarterback proof, I think that, you know, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders are two guys who can sort of, you know, help prove that theory that, you know, you can even just get by with a mediocre quarterback. So, I like where they're kind of going. It's kind of funny. I've been doing a mock draft, actually, as I've been talking to you guys.
Impressive.
You know, and yeah, I haven't missed my turn at all, and it's been great.
No.
But I got Demaryius Thomas in the third round. It's a PPR mock draft, and I was just going, you know, I went running back, because that's kind of what was just, you know, what the board was showing me. And Demaryius Thomas was still there in the third round. I'll tell you this, man. If DT is still there in the third round of your draft and it's your pick, take him.
Yeah.
unless there is like a glaring, glaring other error.
I'll take that. Oh, PPR even better. To go on top of that, you never know. You know, and granted, I'm analyzing some of the stats looking back the 2012, 2011, 2010 era where I think the one year, you know, Plaxico Burress was actually the second most in wide receiver targets for Sanchez, two in there. And Plaxico is probably considered more the number one than Holmes, you know, depending on, as a Jets fan, you probably know him more than me. But I was just trying to, you know, saying the number one is the guy he targets more. That doesn't mean Sanders doesn't come back with being the number one. Maybe I'm wrong. I just like the way DT, you know, Demaryius Thomas plays a little better. I like the height advantage there, but Sanders might come back as, you know, it might be Sanchez might decide those are his two most reliable targets, and kind of the same philosophy he had in New York, where, you know, whatever one they don't double team, that's the guy he's throwing it to. So
We got two more questions for you here, and then we'll cut you loose here, Howard. You know, you mentioned how you ended up going running back, and then something that I think we can all agree on, take Demaryius Thomas if he's there in the third round. Have you found yourself doing that a lot as far as, you know, is there any specific strategies that you've tried that you've really found great success with that you really like your teams? Like, have you gone zero running back, zero wide receivers? You know, do you tend to go running back still, sort of the old fashioned way, I guess it would be referred to as? What's your favorite strategy so far in the mocks?
Well, you know, I mean, it was really kind of funny because we were sitting there towards the end of last season, and I was talking with Craig Mish. We were hosting the Sunday night show together, and the two of us were just, you know, just completely of that mindset that, you know, so much can happen in the NFL with your injuries and your running backs and the way that the NFL has just grown to be a pass heavy thing. You know, it's almost like if you want to correlate it to fantasy baseball, for the last, I'd say maybe about three seasons, some of the more trustworthy pundits out there were like, you got to look into starting pitching early. You can't always wait on starting pitching. And then all of a sudden now you're looking at it and you're like, oh my God, I definitely need starting pitching. Of course, it looked better when Clayton Kershaw was healthy, but that's just a different story. So I said last year that I was done with the running back first theory, that it's an evolving game and the fantasy game has to evolve with it. And if I don't evolve in my draft strategy, well, then, you know, I'm on the outside looking in. I definitely see the merits of drafting a running back early, but in all honesty, I'm going to lean heavily on the wide receivers early on in drafts. I've tried both ways so far, and I've actually done it multiple times where I'm happy with my teams. There was one draft where I went, running backs, first three rounds, just bam, that was it. Nothing but running backs. And I didn't love my wide receivers, but even in a PPR format, I targeted guys that were just, you know, they may not be hit the home run guys, but they were good and solid. So I like that, you know, doing that strategy. But I mean, I've done the zero running back strategy another number of times, and you know, that's actually one of the things that that people just also have to understand. The zero running back strategy does not mean that you don't draft any running back.
No, it's a little bit of hyperbole there.
Right? We've had to explain this a number of times, over the last several weeks.
I listened to that Howard Bender, and now my roster's illegal. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah, right? I mean, listen, we have everybody talks about it. You listen to Sirius, and everybody's talking about the zero running back strategy. And listen, I've done it a bunch of times, and I've come away with some really nice teams. And all that means is that you're not taking your first running back probably until like the sixth or seventh round. And you can still, if you're in a PPR format, you can still do well and grab some of those good pass catching backs. You know, you can end up like building up with the Theo Riddicks of the world. You know, somebody. I'm trying to think. I mean, Carlos Williams was going to be a guy until he went the Bills.
You don't sound bitter at all. Yeah, no, that's. I God. Mean,
that, another you know, another clown.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many of them in professional sports these days. It's embarrassing, to be honest. And that's we play in a PPR league too here. Jesse's in it. Joe's in it. RIP Joe, wherever he is. I think actually he's in a nude yoga class in Nevada right now. If the Bucketeers are wondering where he's at, he's venturing naked across the country to perfect his nude yoga stance. But anyway, we're in this PPR league, and I lucked out. I can't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, but I was really pissed because I got sniped on my RB2, and I ended up settling for Danny Woodhead, who is like a PPR star. Yeah, so especially in PPR, I've been doing this already for. Probably 3 years just waiting, especially in PPR, like you said, on just waiting on running back. And I can see myself doing that even in standard leagues this year.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the whole waiting game at times. I mean, it really – and again, that's why you do all the mock drafts, so that you can just keep seeing what your – what your teams are going to look like if you try this. Because let's face it, no two drafts are alike. And, you can draft – I like to grab a couple of guys who I know are like hometown guys, because I want somebody to do something stupid and reach. You know, it was kind of funny. We were talking about, Chris Kuroda earlier in the show, huge Giants fan, huge homer. And when we were talking, about certain players, all of a sudden I said something about Eli. And he's like, oh, yeah, definitely. I thought that was going to be my big move was, grabbing Eli. But, Eli's not a guy that you don't have to take him until like the fourth round. And I was like, fourth round? Eli? Fourth round? What are you talking about?
Don't do that.
I was like, dude, come on now.
Anytime. I get involved. Go ahead. Sorry, Howard.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I love drafting with guys like that because – they're going to throw you for a loop in your draft. So, you need moments like that. That's why, I'll do a draft of taking nobody that I like just to see where they fall. That's why you do the mock drafts, and you get a much better gauge on really what your home draft could be like.
It's like anytime I'm in a league where I don't know people, so if I, join a random Twitter, somebody says, hey, I need somebody, blah, blah, blah. I always try to announce my fandom. Let everyone know I'm a huge Vikings fan. And I'm a very passionate Vikings fan. But I don't – I've always had a rule. It's like you're a Vikings fan. If you're going to draft your Viking, your token Viking, it's going to be the Vikings defense or the kicker, Or if I'm lucky, I'll take Peterson. But that's it. Other than that, I make sure that I keep my bias aside. If I end up losing out on, someone like Diggs last year, breaking out, no one was drafting him anyways, but, something like that, so be it. I love to announce my fandom to people, so then they're always leery about, hey, if they want a Viking, then they usually will reach a little bit, especially if they're a couple spots ahead of me late in round, so.
Mind games.
Yes, yes, I do it all the time when I'm in a, obviously friends know a little bit more about what I try to do, but when we do our home leagues, but Anytime I'm with strangers, I always announce that.
Yeah. All right. We gotta mention Josh Gordon here before we let you go, Howard. Obviously, you know, talking about a lot of the knuckleheads in baseball and football, and I'd say Josh Gordon is probably the world's preeminent knucklehead at this point. So it was just announced that he will be reinstated by the NFL. However, he will be suspended for the first four games of the season. So does that put him on your radar? And if so, where are you looking to draft him amongst wide receivers?
You know, I mean, it's so tough, and that's why I'm so glad that there's still like a month of mock drafts to do, because in the one that I was just doing, he went in the sixth round. Wow. Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, I mean, you listen to what people are saying. You know, I don't remember who I was talking to the other day, but the guy, like, you know, I was like, oh, well, you know that Josh Gordon and RG3 played together in college, right? You know that there's like a major connection there. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, you know. So these guys were at Baylor, and they did well in the Baylor system. That was, you know, super awesome. You know, here's the thing. And I look at this like I look at injuries. You take a guy like Ryan Matthews, okay, who has never been healthy except for 1 year. So he goes years and years and years getting hurt, sucking. He has one great year where he stays healthy. He has a breakout year. And then everybody starts jumping all over this dude the following year.
Yep.
And they grab him in the first round. And what does he do? He gets hurt.
Yeah, he died. Yeah.
So, you know, and just screwing everybody over left and right like that. So this is how I equate it with Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon has messed up. I'm dropping F-bombs earlier, but when I'm talking about Josh Gordon, I like to keep it clean here. Sorry, Jesse. Just get your bleep on. Here it comes.
Just let it out, Howard. Let it out.
So Josh Gordon f***ed team over 100 times like this. It was unbelievable. They give him chance after chance. He can't get his head on straight. You know, I mean, it's like trying to get Johnny Manziel sober. What the f*** is wrong with Cleveland? They're the worst organization. If it wasn't for the Browns, my Jets would be the worst organization in sports. But the Browns are just complete dog shit as far as a team goes.
Yeah, you should be thankful for them.
Oh, I'm very thankful for them. Listen, they give me so much material. And it's unbelievable. But so you've got a clown like Josh Gordon who can't stay sober, who can't stay out of trouble, you know, and just busted left and right. What makes anybody think that this is the time that he means it for real? Yep. Now, I know that there are addicts out there that, you know, after years and years of saying, no, this is it, I'm going to be clean. And then they fuck up left and right, and they can't get their head on straight. And then finally they stick it out and they become clean. Are we saying that this is the year Josh Gordon does that? He's going to miss the first four games, okay, which is a third of the fantasy season. And then you think that he is not only A, going to toe the straight and narrow, and then B, that all of this time off from football has not ruined this dude's skills.
Yeah, and it's a lot of time off. I mean, really, between now and when he's actually available to come back onto the football field, what odds do you give him not getting suspended again between now and then?
For him not to be suspended, I say that there is probably, at this point right now, a 20% chance at the most that he is not going to get.
That's my feeling, too.
Somebody's going to periscope it live from the club. Hey, look, there's Josh Gordon smoking a big fatty. Look at that. Got his thumb up that hoe's ass right now. And he's doing a line of coke off that other chick's rack.
There you go.
And we're going to see all of that on Periscope. It's going to get tweeted out to the world. And then where are we with – so I say that it's a 20% chance that that doesn't happen.
I agree. If he makes it to the fifth week of the football season where he's going to play, I'll be surprised. Yeah. He's going to do something.
So, yeah, I mean, it's tough because we're sort of, I mean, obviously we're all pretty low on him then. I was trying to look at, like, the wide receiver ADP and think, you know, you got Corey Coleman, who's ADP at Fantasy Pros anyway, is about at 100.
If you're in the last couple of rounds of your, 10-team, 12-team league or whatever, why not? But don't draft him in the sixth round.
Yeah, if it's an upside pick, sure. And if he costs you next to nothing, then sure. He can be a huge boon, to your team. Or just a trade chip if he shows for a game or two. And, he actually shows up and he performs. But I think that's all the more I'm willing to invest in him at this point. And I really don't care how many stories come out of Cleveland that say he's finally clean this time and he's cleaned up his act and all, this and that. I'm not going to listen to any of that coach speak or any of the, the beat writers reports.
Fantasy. Oh, I'm gonna reach for him at some point or another. I'm gonna do it in the league just to piss people off. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. No question about it.
At least once.
No question about it. I'm in at least three leagues where I know that there's somebody that's like super high on Josh Gordon. And I'll probably reach for him in one of those drafts just to be a dick. because listen, I love doing that. This is a game that we're playing here. And if you've done a league with me for years, you know a lot of my tendencies. So because you know a lot of my tendencies, I'm going to do something to screw you over too.
Nice.
That's what I do every year in our home auction league. Every once in a while, I went at last year's team. I went with the heavy wide receiver. I spent a lot of money on my top three wide receivers, like all my money, basically. But I only did it to screw people over. They're like, why do you keep bidding? You're just bidding me up. Well, I guess you'll just have to stick me with my third wide receiver. So,
yeah. Oh, you remember when you kept bidding me up on Nolan Arenado in that draft? Well, guess what, buddy? I don't forget.
Exactly.
Turnabout is fair play indeed. Well, Howard, it's been awesome, man. Thanks for coming on again. Always a blast when we get to talk to you. Remind the Bucketeers out there where they can find all your work.
Fantasyalarm.com. You can't miss it. I do the pitching coach for DFS Monday through Friday. I do articles about all the mock drafts. I run the Fantasy Alarm podcast, which records on Wednesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. But that might actually change a little. But anyway, fantasyalarm.com. I'm all over there. You can also find me on Twitter at RotoBuzzGuy. And again, if you want to get into some of these mock drafts and do all that, it's mockdraftarmy@yahoo.com.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for joining us so much. And a few of our own plugs that I forgot to get out of the top of the show. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter at Fantasy Amateurs. And if you want to email us, we reply to your questions. If you email us, thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com. And if you want, we will even address them on the show. And you can also get t-shirts there. And please, if you like the show, feel free to give us a rate and review on iTunes. It makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside. So, until next time, Howard, man, happy mock drafting, and we appreciate all the work you do, and we thank you for joining the show.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks a lot. Until next week, folks, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.